Hello. Wow, the mic worked the first time. That's pretty incredible. Well, welcome to another episode of Mike M's Weekly Reads. I was thinking today, like I really need to do a DC Noise podcast or DC a spotlight. And I just got caught up in some things that I was really enjoying. And I don't have any particular questions to go over today? So, and Chris had to cancel Retrocast, where I was going to talk some Spider-Man Clone Saga. So I thought I would just talk about some stuff that I've read recently in this Mike M's Weekly Reads. I already have two in the can. It's Sunday, and I thought I would just chat about some of my thoughts. I read some really spectacular stories this week. Some things really, really, really stood out, and there was a couple things that just didn't compare, so it made them like inferior. And it's weird because I've been in an image mood lately, so, but not your stereotypical image. You're more, well, I don't know what stereotypical image is, but not your current image flavor, but your legacy image. And what I mean about that is the superheroes that spawned image, that created that universe. And I don't know how I went down this path. I went into the basement and I was looking for something to read. I'm trying to think of what let me down there. Oh man, I can't remember. Maybe it was something somebody posted. I don't know what it was. But I went to go look for something to read, and I knew it wasn't a Geek Brunch week, and I wanted to read something different. And I was like, oh, I'm gonna poke around in some of the unread books in the archives. And I pulled out Cyberforce. And it's been a while since I've read this Cyberforce. This is a fairly current release. It's not the current one. And it's actually Cyberforce Separated Words, but it's volume 4. And this one was an interesting one because it started off, it ran from 2012 to 2015, and it was written by Mark Silvestri, Matt Hawkins, and Coy Pham was the artist. And then halfway through the series, Marco Torini took over. So, what this was, a crowdfunding. So if I remember correctly, Mark Silvestri crowdfunded. This is the way to do a Kickstarter. This is the way to do a crowdfund. But it's a non-greedy crowdfund. It's like if we meet our Kickstarter goals, we're gonna provide Cyberforce for free for like 5 issues to the community that pre-orders them, up to a certain quantity, of course. But that's pretty amazing. I don't remember if I supported it or not. I may have, but I did take advantage of the 5 free books that came out of it. They weren't necessarily free. You still had to pay for shipping and all that other stuff, but. And I read it early on, and I remember I really, really, really liked it. Like, it really clicked with me. It was like science fiction goodness. And it took place in the future where there was an organization like they're not the CDC, they're called the CD something. Okay? I don't remember exactly what the acronym stood for. But there was this organization, and the guy was married to Psyblade. This takes place in the future, so a lot of the characters were characters I recognized, but they didn't always go by their names, like Ripclaw or Ares or Striker. There were several others. Psyblade. The Speedster Girl. Velocity. So the way they approached this was pretty fantastic because it was like a sci-fi thing. This organization had this. It was very much into the Ra's al Ghul and that type of territory with those Vandal Savage, where they actually want to perfect the Earth, but in order to perfect the Earth, they need to kill off the weak, and they need to reassemble it. So they had like this weird program, and it would calculate probabilities of the Earth surviving and people surviving if certain things happened. And this guy really believed he needed to destroy the Earth. And that's where his daughter, well, it wasn't really his biological daughter. He didn't know that, I don't think. But Psyblade was his wife, and the daughter is Velocity, but they just call her Karen, with spelled with a C. And she escaped and wanted to rebel against her father. And she runs across Stryker, who is her biological father, and they form Cyberforce. And it has Ripclaw and the group are reassembled to try to take down this organization. And the climax of the first arc is they get into the computer room and they're like, what is the probability if we kill Stryker? And it's like, not a good probability. Actually worsens the odds. The guy says, what is the probability if I kill my wife, Psyblade? And it's like a certain percentage, and it's better than, but then the Stryker throws it back. What is the percentage if we kill you? And it got like really good, and it's like, holy shit. So they ended up killing that guy. But during that whole fiasco, there's this villain that was with Ripclaw early on, and they sort of release her because she's kept in the basement and being protected. And I'm gonna see if I can find out what her name is. But CDI was the organization. And the code name is Killjoy. She's down there and she has this infatuation with Ripclaw. So this is like the second arc. And she wants to kill Ripclaw. And in order to do that, she knows she needs to take over the CDI and also work with Psyblade. Not Psyblade. What did I say her name was? They use her first name in this. They don't use her regular name. Francesca Taylor. But she's really like Psyblade. So, and I really need to track down, I need to complete my Top Cow universe. I think I have a full run of Witchblade, but not in singles. If you can, he released some like Omnibus of the Darkness and Witchblade, and it sort of completed like what I had. But I really would like to have a full universe because all of this stuff is related. But anyway, in releasing Killjoy slaughtered like a lot of people and then went after Stryker and Cyberforce, and she almost succeeded, but with the help of one of Velocity doesn't really exhibit her powers. Like she's fast and she's young, but she's not like running around like a speedster, and they don't even call her Velocity, I think, in the entire series. So, but you know it's her just because of her visuals. And she had a similar look to somebody that was in Youngblood too, so I always get them confused. But anyway, this series was freaking amazing. So it got me to go down a rabbit hole. It was a really cool premise. I like the Extinction Protocol. They had Aphrodite in it in the early ones. I don't know the number because Aphrodite 9 is the main character in Aphrodite 9 series, which came out prior to Cyber Force. But Cyber Force had Aphrodite in there, and she was working for the CDI, and she tried to assassinate Stryker, but protect the daughter at the same time because she was working for Francesca. So it had that link to Aphrodite. And then I went back to the. This is a fun thing how things work. And I had bought Cyber Force back in the day from the comic shop. It was one of the few things I was still buying at the comic shop instead of DCBS. So I really didn't have a good record of where, if I had all the issues or not. And it ended at 11. But my database had 12, and it had a cover image, but the cover image was preliminary, and I was like, oh crap. So I went down to the basement, and I was really looking for this thing. So digging around, trying to find it, can't find it. I said, man, that's weird that I wouldn't have it. Why would I have up to 11 and not have this thing? But while I was down there, I grabbed a Rob Liefeld book where he actually wrote and drew it. It was Bloodstrike number 2, and I had already read one. And it is such a knockoff, though, to the Deadpool character at this volume. And it never finishes. Typical Liefeld. It only lasted 2 issues, and now in the new previews, it's coming back with Michael Fife, who's doing it, and he did some work with the Ultimates, but he's known for I can't remember the team, but I buy the hardcovers. It's a Suicide Squad knockoff that he publishes through Bergen Street Press. And it's almost like you can like look at every character in there and point to a member of the Suicide Squad. Captain Boomerang, Deadshot. Like I don't even know how they do it. Other than he probably doesn't, maybe they call it satire, but it's a serious book. I read the first volume and I bought the rest of them, but I haven't read beyond that. But it is like, what if the Suicide Squad continued? So you check that out if you're interested. And I don't remember the title, unfortunately. I had just taken that book upstairs, or I'd have it on the kitchen table. So that led me down that rabbit hole. I brought Bloodstrike number 2 up. I looked for more books. I went to the database on Bloodstrike and I was like, there are no more issues. I read it and it's like to be continued. I was interested in it. I was liking Rob Liefeld's art. I was digging the adventure. And I was like, oh, go find the other issue. And then I went to my database and database didn't have it. There wasn't another issue. I'm like, ah, oh, son of a bitch, he did it to me again. And you know what? I'm gonna keep supporting it. I am a fucking asshole. But I like Todd, I mean, I like Rob Liefeld. I like the image creators. And I get burned every time. So if you don't like to get burned, and Rob is doing a book, like he doesn't have somebody else. Like when he succeeds, he usually has somebody doing Glory or Supreme that's not him. But when he doesn't stick to it, man. I wish he would. I wish he would. He did with DC for a while until he got an argument with them about Deathstroke or Hawk and Dove. I can't remember which one it was. And he was doing Hawkman, so he had his fingers in the DC there for a while, and then got into his mode where he started arguing with people, and he's good at heart. Like he's got a great heart, but he's got those boyish qualities that logic doesn't always prevail until later. He's very spur of the moment, but he paid his guys, right? I heard he paid Stephen Platt a lot of money, and he reminded me of Todd McFarlane, Stephen Platt. It was a lot of detailed art. It looked a lot like the Avatar artists that Avatar has for Crossed and stuff. It was very, very detailed line work. So that led me down the Aphrodite. While I was down there, I was like, oh, there's this Aphrodite series, and she was in Cyber Force. So I grabbed the 11 issues I had, minus the free comic book day one that kicked off in like 2013. And I think I have that, but I don't know if it's in my uninventoried books or if I just don't have it. So I did put it on my want list. But I said, what the hell? I'm going to start with issue two. Oh, I was talking about where issue 12 was of Cyberforce. So if you read the series, it's almost like they crammed three or four issues into one to close it out. So it didn't end. It had a good ending, but it seemed really rushed. I wanted more. I wanted them to flesh out more, but they didn't. They kind of just wrapped it up. If I remember correctly, the daughter was going to go off, was going to stay with her mother, and Stryker went off with the rest of. And there was a weird thing with Ripclaw and Ares because Ares, I mean, Ripclaw was injured, and Ripclaw was kind of like the Wolverine knockoff back in the day, but he was Native American, and he wanted to die. There's one issue where he's with his family, very much in the vein of like Internal Warrior. Like if you're reading that, he was in some kind of purgatory with his family, and he wanted to stay there, and they pulled him back out and let it survive. And he knew that his brother in arms had stolen the drug that could have helped him because he was a drug addict. But there's a lot of plot threads in that. And then Stephen Sage, or Sage, or whatever, him and his wife Linda, did Aphrodite IX9, with Matt Hawkins. And it started off kind of slow and was an artistic beauty. Like the art in the first few issues was like mind-blowingly like beautiful. It got a little less, but it was still beautiful, but a lot less detail after you got past issue four. But it was still beautiful. If you know Stephen Sajak's art, he worked a lot in Top Cow. So this is a story of Genesis and the other area, which is called Speros. And it's more like the humans of Genesis and the cyborgs of Speros are at war. One is really religious, the Genesis people, and one of them are like, they're almost like 70, it's like 70-30, so it's like a human split of 30% and 70% cyborg. But it starts off with Aphrodite with the humans of Genesis. And there's some guy, Burke, who controls her, but he can only control her for like 20 minutes. That little dot on her cheek, the green dot on her cheek, it's very sci-fi-ish, very sci-fi. He could take over and she doesn't remember like what happened during those 20 minutes. And her memory's already bad. And he uses her to kill the royal family of Genesis. So the main character loses his mother and father and wife to Aphrodite. And during that time before she kills the wife, he's falling in love with Aphrodite and trusting her with everything. So it's really bizarre. And then he's like, "You killed my wife." He didn't have an affair with Aphrodite, and Aphrodite has the ability to use pheromones against her victims. So males are very, very subjective. I mean, they're very attracted to her and everything that she does. And she's a killer, man. She's able to analyze things and protocols, especially when she's in mode. But when she gains her humanity by taking a knife and shoving it into that little green circle on her face, she gets control of her body. She gets control and she does heal. She's like kind of like a Wolverine. So one of the dragons that the humans use actually helps her escape, and the guy does not want to kill her that's in charge of the humans that lost his entire family. And then it has a lot of other complexities because there's like gods that are related to Aphrodite. They're like sisters and brothers to her that are in a satellite, and various different satellites orbiting the Earth. And they're sort of like gods watching. They did lose a couple of them, but they have Apollo, they have Hermes, they have Aphrodite who's on Earth, they have Ares. They have a bunch of characters, and they're like monitoring, and their mother is called Mother. It's like Gia, but she like spawned these characters, and they want to destroy the Earth too, so they have their own agenda. So Aphrodite helps the humans get revenge once she tells, I think his name is Mark or whatever, and he becomes really religious, so it has that religious faction. He wasn't religious when his parents were around and his wife was around, but then he found the Lord after everybody died, and he became real religious, and he's like, we gotta kill these cyborgs, we gotta annihilate Speros. So really fascinating, and all those dragons went over there to annihilate him, and Aphrodite met a newer model of her, which was Aphrodite 15, which skipped a couple versions. And she had like revenge to seek out, so they invaded Speros, went undercover, they found other Aphrodites, they found a male Aphrodite, and it gets really convoluted and very suspenseful and very sci-fi. So good. I really enjoyed the hell out of it. A matter of fact, I was gonna record this episode without finishing it, but this morning I just got back into it. Like, I was like, I gotta finish this. And I went out on deck because the deck was really warm. Harley's out there right now. I sat on the swing chair and I read the last four issues of Aphrodite, and that was 11 issues instead of 12. And there is no 12, so that one I didn't have to worry about. But I did search for that Cyber Force for a long time. I went to my comic shop, I went to Atomic Avenue, I went everywhere I possibly could look to see if this thing existed, and it doesn't exist. There is no 12. A matter of fact, in 11 it says finish, but my database had it, so I need to delete it. And it had an image for it, which means that it was solicited at one point in time. There was a 12. And I guess sales, they're like, hey, let's cut it short. We're not making our profits. Profit margin ain't working. And I don't understand because every time they experiment with something wonderful, like Marvel goes to 99 cents with Avengers Unplugged or Fantastic Four Unplugged or Untold Legend Untold Tales of Spider-Man 99 cents, or in this case give Cyber Force for free to those that want to get it for the first few issues. You think that would be enough to get like an army behind this thing and say, man, this story's tight and it's good and I got it for free and I'll support this book for the next six issues because I want to know what goes on. Well, it doesn't work that way in our world, and things don't, people navigate to what they navigate, and it just goes to show how many people don't pay attention to previews. That's a small minority that understand even how the comic community really works and what's free and what's not and how you can get things, and people get what they get and mostly to what's available, and they don't hear about some of these glorious wonders that is Cyber Force and Aphrodite. So what I'm going to seek out is I believe I completed all my Cyber Force comics, but there is things like there might be a Velocity, and I think I completed these recently. So, yep, Velocity 1 through 3 in the second series was 4 issues. The first one was 3. And I did complete that. But if I look for Angelus or Psyblade. Yeah, I need to get this. So like I need to find out these Psyblade. There's even a Psyblade Ghostwriter, right? Fuck. Psyblade Pilot Season, I have that one. Psyblade Shy crossover. Man, is there Cyber Nanny too? Cyber Nanny. Cyber Nary. Yeah, I need that. And that was a Jim Lee, not a Top Cow. Oh, I know Ripclaw had a series, so let's check that out. Rip Claw. I need to seek those out. I do not have them. Volume 1, Volume 2. I have Pilot Season, and I must have read it because it's archived. So I have some Ripclaw to buy. And there's probably a lot of other things I could seek out. Matter of fact, if I just go to Wikipedia and type Cyberforce. Oops, I don't know how to spell. And we go to Wikipedia and we see. So I have all their volumes, but there might be. Ballistic, that was another one character that was in this. She was, I think Ballistic was the sister of Velocity in this particular series. They don't list Ares here. That's interesting. Yeah, it says Cyberforce was relaunched in the fall of 20 as a digital-only series written by Matt Hawkins. That might be the digital-only, and that's why it was free. Oh no, the 2012 one. Sorry, 2012 Top Cow debuted a fourth volume of Cyberforce as part of the company's Top Cow Rebirth. Before Rebirth, how about that? Funded through a Kickstarter campaign, the first 5 issues were released for free. So why didn't people like flock to this? Why? I did. Silvestri provided cyberpunk-influenced art for the rebooted series, while Coy Pham was brought aboard as the illustrator after 5 years of exclusive work for Marvel Comics. The first issue received positive review from IGN. But really fast, this was really worth it if you can seek it out. I'd recommend it, especially if you like sci-fi suspense. And very related to Aphrodite. Like you have to get the Aphrodite, and Harley's full of crap. So I have to. I don't know why she does this to me. Every time I grab headsets, she decides to go outside and roll in the grass. And our grass isn't in great shape this year. I don't know if we've gotten less water than usual, but it's not in good shape. I'm gonna replace some of it. Plus, we've had gophers towards the top. Those little motherfuckers tear up the grass. But anyway, that was really cool. And then what I got into was some retro stuff, and I guess I'm gonna talk about it. I had recently bought, I think, the first 15 issues of Arok, Son of Thunder from DC Comics. And I want to complete it at some point. And it's ARAK. I've read like one or two issues. That's all I owned of it before I decided to get this latest purchase. And I said, you know what? going to record a retro, which we didn't end up doing because Chris couldn't make it. And I thought, well, I'll do an Arrak. I hadn't read it. It's Roy Thomas, and this was in the 80s. I think it was 81. So let me actually bring it up. Arrak, Son of Thunder. Roy Thomas and Ernie Colon, and it's Colon. You'll hear his name. He's done a lot of magazine stuff, a lot of different pieces of art. He's really good. Cool story premise. He was a young lad, Native American, and it looks like the Vikings were on one of their Viking ships, and they found him floating in a boat, and they brought him aboard. And one guy, the captain of the ship, wants to kill him because he thinks he's a bad omen. Whereas the other guy says, I saved him, so he's by right my slave. And he kind of raises Arrak as his own. He teaches him to fight better, do different stuff. It doesn't give a lot of backstory, like he, other than you know that he thinks he lost all his people and has God forsake him, even though he thinks he's the son of one of the gods. That's why he gets Son of Thunder. And it shows a lot of him growing up and working with the Vikings. And the Vikings aren't like a good people. Like they go to one of their areas, I think it was in North America or somewhere, where they invade a monastery and they kill a lot of monks. And Arrak saves one. But he does, they still raid it. Like, he knows who he is. He knows that he's part of this Viking group, and they steal everything. They steal everything that's there. All the food, they just leave them there. And after they're done, they go back to where they were, and they spend the winter, and then in the spring they go raid places again. Well, they say, hey, I bet you that place healed again. Let's go raid it. Well, this time they find a sorceress on the rocky mountain before they get to that area to raid with the monks. And she calls upon a mighty serpent to overturn the boat and kill most of the Vikings. And they take Arrak's father figure, if you will, and capture him, and they take the leader of the ship as well, and they imprison him. Arrak manages to escape with the monk, and he loses his family, his Viking family. And now you're in a world of sword and sorcery and figuring things out. So it was a really good intro to the character who's trying to find his own identity within a world. And he's sort of lost the world that he knew as a Viking. And they thought of him as a bad omen. Like, they thought he was, they called him burn skin, and like, why is his skin red? And a lot of people thought, like, it's not white like ours, like the Vikings were, so something must be wrong with him. So it had that interesting aspect. And then one of my resolutions, I had some really crazy resolutions. One of them's to finish a novel, which I still haven't done. I'm about 60 pages into it. The other one was to finish an omnibus this year, and I'm very close to this one. But I wanted to get back into the Clone Saga, and I read a lot. Okay, so how many pages? Does it tell us a page count on this sucker? I know it does in the solicits, but I don't have the solicits. But it's over 1,000 pages. This thing is freaking huge. And if I go to where it all started, I cried during this. It was so good. I got really emotional. So I started with Spectacular Spider-Man 222, where I had left off. And this one had with Tom DeFalco, which was one of my favorite writers, with Sal Buscema breakdowns and Bill Sienkiewicz on inks, developed a really, really Midnight Sun type look to it. Very dark, and it was very appropriate because this story was very dark. It had Kane searching through the Jackal's fortress looking for things, and he finds another clone of Peter Parker that he accidentally releases, and he's like, "Which one's the real one?" And the Jackal has, he's known as Professor Milo or whatever his name is, and he has a weird looking clone creature called Jack, and that follows him around everywhere. And as he invades it, and also Scarier from a previous issue shows up, but it actually ends up leaving. So the Jackal's laughing. He's like, "Okay, you found my fortress. You know about it." Kane thinks he found out who the real Peter Parker is, and he thinks it's the guy that's really Spider-Man now. But it was really dark and really, really spectacular. The art. This book has made me fall in love with the omnibus format again, because not only is it big, it has everything. It's just a beautiful piece of. And if you learn to read them like I do, like I could sit and put it on my lap. I put it on the arm of the chair and read it like that. They're heavy. Like you can drop this and kill somebody's foot or toe or something. It's a real heavy book. But it was amazing, amazing story. Like I dug the hell out of it. And the other thing is it has Flash Thompson in there, and he's coaching a young bunch of kids. He doesn't have much money, and Ben Reilly is watching him. He's the clone of Peter as well. And he's like, "It's weird because the way they lead you into this is it makes you so much believe. At least I'm a true believer that Ben Reilly at this point is the real Peter Parker, and that Peter Parker is the clone, just because he's the one that remembers everything. He's the one that remembers Flash Thompson picking on him as a kid, making his life hell. And he's like, man, I'm glad he turned out to this, because he's helping these kids. He's helping all different kinds of kids." And then this issue had a really scary scene. Like, this is stuff people go through in life. Like, I even had a friend have this. Not that. Mary Jane goes to the doctor, has a sit down. Like, I don't even know what he tells her, but it sucks. The doctor tells her, "Everything looks good, except I do see a minor anomaly." And she's pregnant at this time, and you're like, what? Anomaly? And he goes, "Trust me, it's nothing to worry about." But why doesn't he just tell her, like, he says, "Come back later and we'll talk about this anomaly." And I read like five or six more issues, and you don't know what the anomaly is yet. So that's a big thing. And she goes back out, and she's like, "I had sex with the dude that was bitten by a radioactive spider. God knows what the hell's it's doing to my body." So you have that suspense. And then you have this detective that was in Utah that's trying to bust, I think Kane killed people over there, and he looks like him too. But somebody that looks like Peter killed his partner and stuff, so he's trying to frame Peter for murder, and he doesn't have no money, his wife is pregnant, he doesn't know what to do. There's a lot of crazy stuff happening in this issue. And then the Jackal decides to go invade the place where Scarlet Spider is with Flash Thompson and almost kill his kids with these weird dragon-like prototypes. And then that new spider clone, the third one, just gets a ride with a trucker, and he's telling the trucker, "Hey, I don't even know who I am." This third clone doesn't even know who he is or how he got where he is. And that leads us into Web of Spider-Man 123, which was also amazing, continues where he's attacking Flash Thompson and the Scarlet Spider is fighting him. And Kane goes and confronts Spider-Man and says, "You are the real Peter Parker." And Peter Parker, Spider-Man's like, "How do you know? Like, you're just showing me paper. Who validated this paper to say that's true, you know?" So Scarlet Spider works on saving the kids from these monsters, and it's a big battle with the Jackal. And Jackal gets arrested. A matter of fact, he allows himself to get arrested. And Jack, that weird demon-like creature, actually dies because all the clones are supposed to deteriorate. They have a flaw in them, and it triggers some deterioration. And Jack, before Jack deteriorates, he gives Scarlet Spider a disc, and he said, "Your future is in your hands now." And when he's contemplating on the roof of something, Ben Reilly's up there, and he's just tortured with all these different thoughts. And he's like, "What is this disc gonna tell me? Fuck it!" And he throws it into the ocean. And Spider-Man fights Kane. And the big thing that happens in this issue of Web of Spider-Man is, this is the part I really love, is that Aunt May comes out of her coma. She's been in a coma for like 100,000 pages of comic book for, as this is going on. And I was just like in shock when I saw her come out of the coma. And I must have not read this because I got really emotional. I got really emotional. But 123 was written by Terry Cavanagh with Stephen Butler art. It was a really solid issue. And that leads us into another issue, which is pretty amazing. A matter of fact, the way the omnibus put it together is fantastic. It's like they didn't want to break the momentum of the story, so some of these extra sized issues, they want to include the content, but they don't want you to experience a break in the story momentum. So they put all the back matter in the back matter. In other words, the main story that's an Amazing Spider-Man 400, which is by J.M. DeMatteis and Mark Bagley, one of the best fucking Spider-Man comics I've ever read. It has a little opening too by Stan Lee saying, how people says you can't sell spiders. People hate spiders. They want to step on spiders. What? You want a teenager? Teenagers are sidekicks. You can't make a main comic book with sidekicks. And he just talks about the success. He says, "Hey, we're at 400 issues." And he says, "We'll see you around when 1,000 rolls around." It's just kind of cool to see that. So Aunt May comes out of her coma, and Peter rushes to the hospital, and he's like, "Aunt May, you're all right, you're right." They hug each other, they're crying, they can't believe everything that's going on. And this is the part that breaks my heart, because it reminds me of my grandmother, and man, God, I wish I would have taken her out of the hospital, because she said, "Michael, please take me out of here." And it's almost like she knew. It's almost like she knew she was going to die, just like Aunt May knew. And she's just like, "Take me out." And the doctor says, "You've been in a coma for months. We can't let you leave here." And she looks at Peter and she says, "Peter, I need to go home." And Peter takes her home. Like, I'm already starting to tear up, And she gets home and she's there. And Mary Jane comes out and she's in an apron. She's like, "I baked your favorite blueberry muffins and I'm so glad to see you." And she just looks at Mary Jane's eyes and without it saying a word, she says, "Mary Jane Parker, you're pregnant." And she's like, "Peter, why didn't you tell me?" And Mary Jane's like, What do you know? How did you know?" And she says, "Intuition. I could tell." And she talks about a story when Peter was born and her sister and husband when her sister told her she was pregnant, she knew. And it's just a very tearful moment, and she ends with, "Man, I'm really tired." And then Scarlet Spider decides to show up on the same day, and Peter's real reluctant to talk to him, and he's like, "Peter, we have to talk." And he says, "You know, they dress up." He puts a spider garment, and he goes, "We can't be out here forever. We're in the backyard talking." And he says, "You know what? You got everything. Your aunt's back. Everything's copacetic. I think I'm gonna leave and letting you straight everything out." And he says, "You don't have to leave," but he does leave. And really good scene, like tearjerker with Aunt May, and she's talking about, you know, how her and Aunt May's best friend, which is Mary Jane's mother, would try to hook them up since they were kids, and they kind of always knew you know, that they would be together, and real emotional type story. And then it cuts to Peter and Mary Jane watching old videos of Aunt May with him as a boy, and the mother and Uncle Ben, and it's just really freaking emotional. You think everything's going bad, she's got good vitals and things are going well, and there's somebody watching. And if you listen to me back when I was covering this at the beginning, the Traveler is there, and Ravencroft was, you know, Carnage was in that the sane asylum. Ravencroft and the Traveler originated for that. He's actually watching Peter very, very carefully. And it shows Ben Reilly, like, just really tortured. Like, he wants to leave, but he's not leaving for some reason. And he's like, he just can't get it. He says, "How could I have all these memories and be a clone? How, what if I'm not the clone?" And there's all this stuff, and then you have a clone, the third Peter, almost getting arrested. And then they want to go to the Empire State Building, and he takes Aunt May to the top of the Empire State Building. And this is where she confronts him. You know, they're just looking out and they're holding each other, and she goes, "Peter, how does it feel?" I'm gonna cry. And he says, "How does what feel? Swinging over the city, almost flying, really? How wonderful to be so light, so free." And he says, "I don't know what you're talking about." And she says, "It's funny, I've known for years. How could I not? Living under the same roof with you all the time, I'd have been an idiot not to know. But Peter could never really let myself know." So she allowed herself to deny that they were the same, you know, Peter Parker and Spider-Man were the same. And she tells him, and he says, "I just can't believe you knew who I was," and all this stuff. And it gets really freaking emotional. And she tells him how proud. She says, "Peter Parker, you're as good a man as your Uncle Ben, and no kinder, more decent soul ever lived. If he was here, he'd let you know in no uncertain terms how proud of he was of you, and how proud we both are." And then she says, "You know, I need to go home. I'm really exhausted and tired." And then he takes her home, and it's kind of like she knows she's gonna die. Like, it's it, you know. And she tells Peter, he says, like, let me talk, call a Dr. Capullo or whatever her name is, and he's to come check on you. You're burning a fever." And she says, No doctors, no hospital, no Mary Jane or Anna. This time is for us to say our goodbyes." And he's like, "Goodbyes? What are you talking about? It's just a little fever. I'm sure once the doctor sees you." And she says, "Peter, don't you see my sweet nephew? These past week together, it's been a gift. A chance for us to take our leave. I couldn't just fade away like that. I had to hold on just a little bit longer for you. You've never been very good at letting go, Peter. Losing your parents the way you did made it so hard for you." He says, "No, Aunt May. Yes, but not all leave taking is bad. I've had a good life, a long life, but I'm tired, Peter, and it's my time." And she goes. And she talks about the dream of when she was dying and he was there. And oh man, it goes back to some issues back when she was in the coma. And he recalls the book that they read together, and it was Peter Pan. And he's like, "Second to the right and straight on till morning. Remember that? How Peter Pan and Wendy, Michael and John would fly over the city up to the heavens? That's what I want you to do, Aunt May. Let go, fly a second to the right. And then she's dead. And I just got, like, real emotional. I know this fucking shit is a fucking comic book, you know? I know that characters die all the time, but it's done so fucking good. And Bagley captures all the emotions, and it's just fucking amazing. It's just a beautiful piece of work. And then your emotions switch. You get gut punched. Now you're... It's like watching Man of Steel when you're back in the movies and Superman died and you're sad and Lois is there with the mother and you have Mary Jane and all the people that loved Aunt May there. And they're all crying and they're all at the house now after the funeral and they're trying to get by and then somebody knocks on the door and it's the police. On the day of the fucking, you know, funeral. And they're like, Peter Parker, you're under arrest. And he's like, what am I under arrest for? You're under arrest for murder. And then the next few issues deal with him in prison. And Scarlet Spider trying to help Mary Jane. And she wants nothing to do with him because she knows he looks just like Peter. Like, she's like, put your goddamn mask on. You can't be him. She just can't deal with it. And she's like, get out of here. But then she realizes she needs someone's help. And she's like, whose help do I get to try to get my husband out of prison? And she's pregnant. And she's like, I got to turn to Matt Murdock, Daredevil. She knows, you know. She knows who they are. Daredevil's dead. I can't go to Daredevil. So Daredevil's dead at this time. You're like, son of a bitch. What's going to happen? Well, who comes through? Hard-ass J. Jonah Jameson, man. He comes through. He's like, he loves Peter even though he's like fucking on his ass all the time. He loves him and he doesn't let it be shown because other people are asking Jonah for help. You know, like Peter needs us and he's like being hard-ass and he's like, he's a criminal, blah, blah, blah. Shuts his door, bam! And then he's like on the phone with his lawyer. He says, I want the best for this kid. I want everything to be the best. He wants to protect Peter. Fucking amazing shit. This is the Clone Saga journey I've been on for a while. And I just rampaged through issues yesterday. I was like, this omnibus is a beautiful thing. It's just amazing. So many great artists, so many great stories. I could see people not liking it, but the way I'm experiencing now, it doesn't drag because of the way I'm experiencing it in this omnibus. It doesn't drag like people that were buying it monthly, maybe it did drag on forever and ever. But to me, it feels like a wonderful nightfall or a no man's land, except much bigger. So much more convoluted, but amazing. And I thought I'd share that with you. I was going to share it on Retrocast, but things didn't quite work out. And I might juggle these issues episodes around, but it was fucking amazing. And I'm going to go through the weekly reads on this one because I think I'm going to juggle the numbers around a little bit. And we'll just call this an episode. So we have from May 29th, 2017 to June 4th of 2017. The books... 5, I love it. 4, I really like it. 3, I like it. 2, did not like it. 1, I hated it. So we had a total of 35 books. And I got the sniffles because I got emotional with that Spider-Man thing. May Parker, she taught us love. Ben Parker, he was loved. Oh my goodness gracious. What a great... Oh, man. And I forgot all these like specialty covers like that Spider-Man had, where they had the overlay of the die cut cover, like it would have Spider-Man in jail, like he's sticking to the wall, and but you'd have the bars of the prison in front. Oh man, this shit's just so good. So I read several more issues, and then they collected all of the back matter into a story, and there was a there was some good stuff there. I know some people don't like JRJR, but he did some back matter story stuff that was really spot on for me with DeMatteis. And one of them had like that John Candy feel to it, like where Ben Reilly, this is like 5 years ago, and Ben Reilly is really struggling and angry and doesn't know what he is and doesn't believe he's real, and he runs into like a John Candy from Planes, Trains, and Automobiles on a bus trip. And it's kind of heartbreaking because it's very similar to that. And I believe when they were trying to capture it, they were trying to capture the John Candy character. Really interesting stuff. But back to the countdown, for that time, we had 35 total, 5 Valiant, 9 Marvel, 21 DC, at 2 out of 5. And this is an unusual one. This was one of the Daredevil annuals. Not the first volume, but whatever the third volume or second volume was. It was Daredevil Annual number 1. This was Echo going to a concert with a friend, and everyone is infected by the Claw virus. And we're talking about Claw, that's the Black Panther villain. Goes to get Daredevil's help and reverse the virus with the sound engineer by playing the tunes backwards. It has a gladiator story and Vanessa Del Rey art on the first one. That's really weird that I gave it a 2 out of 5, but man, it must have not really hit the spot for me. So now we get to 3 out of 5s. We had Rapture number 1. This is Valiant. Tama in the Deadside needs help taking on Babylon, goes to Nidjak, Punk Mambo, and Shadow Man. I put a note in here that I fell asleep twice trying to read it. But it was a 3 out of 5. We have Justice League of America number 6. Ray has to puncture heart of Lobo to cure him from a virus, and they defeat Aegis. We have Superpowers number 6, and this is the kids' book, the one that's in the kids' line. And it's they take on Darkseid. We have Cyborg number 12. Cybernetic Rat attacks and finds Cyborg after his sidekick starts an underground rap circuit. Sarah gives Cyborg a code to stop the rat attack, and Sarah is his like lover, that's a scientist. I don't think he knew at this time that she loves him, but he does. We have Venom 2016 number 1 through 6. It's being relaunched again, as a new number 1. A new Venom arises, ex-vet Lee, and kills a lot of people, goes to work for Black Cat and gets framed by cops and has to work for them too. The costume wants him to be a hero, but he does not. He tries to leave him and attach to a cop. This was actually the Venom that nobody is ever going to remember. This is the vet, ex-vet Lee. Most people know Eddie Brock. They know Flash Thompson. You can name a couple of Venoms, but they're not going to remember Lee, I'll tell you. Now we jump into the 4 out of 5s. We have Gamora. The backstory about her going after the Badoon. Nebula hates her sister and manipulates her, and Thanos, no love for Nebula. So it's kind of like very much in the vein of Guardians movies. We have Secret Wars number 2, the Cosmic Cube history, and why Steve is acting the way he is. Black Widow takes out Hawkeye so she can do what is necessary. Tony fights out where the fragments of the cube are. We have Red Hood and the Outlaws 9 and 10 searching for the Bo-Ra of Korak. Artemis sees her sister Akila alive again, resurrected by the leader of Korak. Jason relives his death at the hands of the Joker, and Bizarro is the savior of the people. That sounds like fantastic issues. Even though it's 4 out of 5. EXO Manowar 2017 number 3, the Akkadian Empire history. Arrak goes after the Candium King, but they take the city. Don't get king because Azure Army's impatient becomes captain. Oh, this is the new one where he actually becomes captain really quick. Yeah, he's a slave initially, but then raises to the ranks based on his war experience of the past. I'm drinking an A&W cream soda diet. We have Green Arrow number 23. Ollie fights Eddie Fries. Red Arrow and Arsenal stop Cheshire from too much damage. Canary working with reporter that has been supporting Ollie. The Space Needle is destroyed. We have Daredevil 10 through 15. Blind Spot is back. A new villain made art out of 100 people's bloods. Also made art with dead Inhumans. Matt might lose his job because he keeps vanishing. Court order to stop the art exhibit. Inhumans investigating the deaths, and Daredevil seeks their help, but Medusa denies him. Blind Spot finds Muse as he goes after those that closed his blood art, and he helps them escape minus one, but then he may have been killed. Blind Spot gets his eyes taken out by Muse, so now he's blind. Daredevil and the humans take out Muse. Daredevil, who is frustrated, puts a bounty on himself to take out the villains. So, if he puts out a bounty on himself, the villains will come to him. He did not expect an inhuman who is trying to save his son to get him to walk again. We have Eternal Warrior, The Awakening. Galan gets his own axe in the head by Alpha him and loses his memory, but then remembers because of Geomancer and kills Alpha Haim and lets Felegion destroy itself. We have Ninjak 27, Americas after Dr. Khan and gets killed. Ninjak goes after him and runs into the enhanced lizard humans. They kill Dr. Khan and lizard brother and sister live. Go after another doctor in America. We have EXO Man of War 2017 Free Comic Book Day. EXO saves a small town from being destroyed, at least for a day. A new Psyot that can talk to birds. And Livewire investigates the murder of Psyots in a hidden location. Bloodshot tries to recall Ray's hidden years in 4001 AD. Hulk number 2, landlord still trying to evict this is She-Hulk, by the way, even though it's called Hulk. Landlord trying to evict tenant but gets taken out and not by Jennifer, who is still trying to avoid becoming the Hulk. So she's struggling with this after the death of her cousin. She doesn't want to become the Hulk. Suicide Squad number 16 through 18. Traitor Hargrove discovered Amanda back in control and invades Lex to take Kryptonite. He willingly gives the Kryptonite to her. Enchantress is powerful. A boomerang teleported without an arm, but later gets it back. Rustium conquered and captured by Squad. Kryptonite goes into Zod. They take down the people. Harley and Rick get it on, like sexually. Zod takes bomb out of his own head. Eradicator and Cyborg Superman show up at the end. So that if you think about it, you have Zod, Cyborg Superman, and Eradicator, big Superman type villains together. That was the top 4 out of 5. And then we get into the 5 out of 5s, and it was my first read ever of Batman: The Long Halloween. It's like the origin of Two-Face. A new Falcone arises as there is a Calendar Man killer, and it's trying to find the killer throughout the whole series. Harvey's wife wants a kid and will go to extremes. There's so much stuff that goes on in there, and it's a really, really, really good read. I was so glad I read it. I never read it before. I started with Dark Victory, and I never had gone back to read Long Halloween. So I read this for Gotham by Geeks, and man, it was spectacular. That's the 5 out of 5s. So I'm glad you listened to this, and we will be back. I have two more episodes in the can. This one probably release f before the other two. And then I'll get those rolled out this week. They'll probably be just a bunch of Mike M's weekly reads. So thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you soon. You can reach me at Twitter at Mike Myers Brunch. Please send questions, or else you'll get more of this. I won't have things to discuss. I'll have to come up with stuff myself, which may be okay. It may not be. Depends on what you like. What else? I'm on the Twitter machines at Mike Myers Brunch. My email is mike@comicbooknoise.com. You can reach me on Facebook at Geek Brunch Podcast. The webpage is geekbrunchpodcast.com. And the podcasts hosted there are Mike M's Weekly Reads, Mike M's Collector's Corner, and Geek Brunch, along with Geek Brunch Retro. So there's four podcasts on that feed. On the DC Noise one, I have the DC Noise Spotlight, Monthly Spotlight, Mike M's DC Noise Monthly Spotlight. And I need to get that back on track. A matter of fact, I have some plans today to read three or four books coming out of to prepare for that record this week. So thank you all for listening, and we'll talk to you again in about a week. So have a good one. Bye. Gotta hit the stop button. Stop.